Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another Cosmic Circus review. Today, we are talking about the remarkable life of Ibelin. My name is Vin. With me, as always, is John.
Hello.
And I'm really excited to be talking about this movie. We almost did Venom 3, which would have been a humongous mistake. So The Remarkable Life of Ibelin, 2024, directed by Benjamin Ree. This is a documentary movie about a boy named Matt Steen. He's a Norwegian gamer with Duchenne's disease. John, what can you tell us about this disease?
I only know from what the documentary explains. I know that in the documentary, it involves, you know, for at least for him, he starts out okay. He can walk, but it's degenerative. It goes downhill the more he gets older.
Right. From what I understand, it's a degenerative muscle disease. It affects all the muscles in your body. Not just one, not just two. It eventually affects all the muscles. There's no cure right now. Most patients, I think, live... I don't think they live past 30 most of the time. Because eventually it affects your heart muscles and then you can't do anything. So it's very, very tragic. And that there's no cure at all. From what I read, I think the record right now, I think, is a 60-year-old, which is pretty incredible. So in this story, we're following the life of this young man who basically lives through, because he can mainly just move his few fingers. So he lives through the internet by playing World of Warcraft. And that's how he can experience a whole like range of life and emotions that he can't really do just from home. We don't want to spoil too much, of course. But what's remarkable is that in this documentary, they recreated his chat history from World of Warcraft. They recreated that within, they recreated the World of Warcraft within the documentary. And then they interview each of the players that that he's interacting with. So that you get the real people talking about how he's impacted their life so positively just through the internet, even though they never met. So I think that's a little bit of setup for the movie. John, is there anything you want to add?
Well, I was going to say, Ben, I think you know how I feel about this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think this time it is only, you know, considering this event, what are your thoughts on The Remarkable Life of Ibelin? Is what I want to know. I want to know your thoughts first.
So I think the first thing I have to say is that this is one of the rare movies in the last many, many, many years where I actually almost cried. I almost never cry in general, especially during movies, like never.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie, especially there's the last scene. I guess, I don't know if I mentioned it already, but the very last scene is the funeral. And this is real footage from his real funeral when all the friends fly in and they're all speaking at his funeral. And then his friends are carrying the casket. It almost killed me. Like, it's so, so emotional. It's so powerful. And I just, like, of course, we all live online lives now in 2024. Who doesn't? But this is following a boy who was born in 89 and lived until 2014. So this is a world 10 years ago when the internet was still pretty new. He at one point, he falls in love with a girl through the game. And the girl's parents don't understand why she's spending all the time playing games. And they take away her computer because just nobody understood back then, like, what the internet was and what social connection was on the internet. And it really took me back to the time, like, when I was a kid, because now kids growing up, an online friend is an online friend. No big deal. Back then it was, you're talking to strangers on the internet. And what he had, it was so special because with his condition, this gave him opportunities to connect with people in ways that he was struggling with in real life. I was especially moved. There's one story where he's friends with a mother and her son has autism, and the mother was having trouble connecting with the boy with autism, because he was having trouble with emotions in real life. But Ibelin, Matt's, he told the mom, why don't you try connecting through this game? Because you both like games, just connect through the game. And through the game, the boy and his mom were able to have this deep emotional connection. They were able to talk to each other in ways that he wasn't comfortable doing in real life. And then
I think we're just going straight into spoilers.
I'm all over the place with this, man. I'm an emotional wreck.
Spoilers for The Remarkable Life of Ibelin. I think we both think it's very clear that we both love this film. So,
yeah.
It's documentary. So if you have not watched M1, we're just going to just, I think we're so overwhelmed by it. We're just going to just fly off and fly off the handle. I'm going to say this real quick. This is one of the best documentaries I watched this year. I watched it at Sundance. I wasn't expecting anything from it. And it emotionally devastated me in the best way. I highly recommend it. Now, then, Purge.
So with this story, because I mean, it's such a beautiful story, because there's this kid with autism and he's struggling with emotional connection. The Iblin tells him, connect through the game. They connect through the game. And now he and his mom have like a genuine relationship now, purely because he told them, use this game to connect. And this is exactly, from what I'm pretty sure, this is exactly what autism treatment is trying to do right now. They're trying to find ways to help people with autism try to connect in the real world and express themselves and understand emotion from others. And this is just shows the power of online connection and online games in such a positive way. And this boy understood that, and he used it to his advantage to help him and to help others. It's just, it's remarkable. It's amazing. It's fantastic.
I think that's one of the brilliant things about it, is that there's a lot of stigmatism around meeting people online. A lot of stigmatism, whether you're online dating got a little better after the pandemic.
Sure.
Like before the pandemic, it was like, oh, you're meeting somebody online. After the pandemic, I think almost 80% of people date online now, you know.
I mean, Tinder is so popular, it's becoming like less popular. And the people move to Bumble, they move to Hinge, but Match.com, the original.
Tinder is like the DoorDash for dating now. It's just it's like, that's all it is.
That's a good tweet. That's a good tweet.
Yeah, it's the DoorDash for dating. But like, I feel like this movie not just shows like where things are, even like back then, that it shows the power of the connection you can have even online.
Yeah.
Taking up the context of, you know, the disability perspective and all that stuff, I think it's just, even if you take that character away, or that individual, Iblin, there are some real genuine relationships surrounding that community, that guild.
Mm-hmm.
We're right here. Can we just drop by? I'll just drop by?
Yeah, yeah. We're both in Oslo. That's what he says.
Yeah, yeah. Just those little small moments, like how even if somebody's not around you, they can mean the world to you, even in a virtual space. And I think that's the beautiful power of this documentary and how emotionally impacting any relationship can be, even if you've never been in the physical presence of somebody. Then I've never met you in person. You and I have never met in person.
Mm-mm.
You know, somehow there is a strong friendship, even though you're in this little small square every week for me, you know?
The sparks are real, John.
Yeah, yeah, I'm just saying, yeah. Just saying, every time I see your beard, I hear the Beatles. That's all I'm telling you. That's all I'm saying. But the point is, I think it is going to be in my top 10 of the year.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah. And
I think I want to say that the biggest challenge of this movie, how do you recommend it to someone? It's a documentary about World of Warcraft. It's a documentary about a kid with a disease. It's a documentary about a boy who dies and everyone is sad and it's emotional. How do you recommend this to someone in like a short way that really conveys?
I think that's exactly how you recommend it. If you want to see a powerful movie about drama, romance, fantasy, told from a virtual space, and it's about somebody who's seemingly mattered to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to cry, if you want to feel adventure, if you want to feel romance, if you want to feel drama, all in one, while watching it on a documentary at the same time, I think this is the movie for you.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great way to put it, because there's so much emotion in this, and it's 100 minutes. It's short. It flies by. It's like relatively a very simple story. It, like from the beginning, you know what happens, you know everything. But then it's watching it unfold and watching these meaningful connections that he made with people. When they're showing like the reenacted scenes, and then they're intercutting it with like the interviews with those actual players. showing how he impacted their lives, and you're watching the interactions happen that impacted their lives. I think that the structure of it is great. It's so interesting and influential and powerful.
And you can see just how like each person, like it comes across on their like face, like mm-hmm. like how much this situation meant to them. Like, for example, you know, Kanoki, we're talking about that mom and that son. I mean, what is the beautiful simplicity of telling a mom and son, like, look, you know, you can't hug. You can't mm-hmm. hug in real life. He likes gaming. Try hugging him in the game. She goes, well, you know, I still would love to like get that hug one day. But once you realize that was the gateway to get him there, it's beautiful. It's beautiful how he phrases, you can work towards that. Mm-hmm. You can work towards that. It's such a beautiful moment and sentiment. At the same time, there's another part of the documentary with the same mom where you could tell that somebody's being a parent. Like been a parent, because they just have a way of reading people. Have a way of reading people when you've been around somebody who's struggling, or your kid has struggled. If she says to him, what is it she says? Did you go on vacation in the hospital?
Yeah. You know, did you go on vacation? Did you go on vacation in prison?
Did you go on vacation in prison? Did you go on vacation in the hospital? Yeah. He disappeared and then came back. No.
Yeah. He was quiet for 5 minutes and yeah. then 10 no's. Yeah.
Yeah. And did it? She goes, did I hit a button there?
Yeah.
Did
yeah.
I hit a button? That's a very, very apparent mom thing to yeah. read. You know, yeah. you can tell she's been a mom and dealt with that kind of denial. And yeah. it's just the connections that are so authentic and beautifully portrayed and emotional. And like, it's very difficult sometimes to get that in a documentary. Mm-hmm. If you don't play it just right, but like, you could tell everybody in this was passionately involved. And I got then, I mean, like rewatching it, I was almost crying even before I even got on this like video call. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. For you, you know, like we recorded a disability podcast a few days ago. But for you, yeah. how do you feel your life is reflected in this?
If that has not gone out, we're still editing this as we're talking. If that disability discussion has not gone out yet, I will clarify again. I live with my own condition. It's not degenerative, you know, it's kind of just, it just is, it exists. And I am one of the lucky people that has an active life, both in the home and outside the home. I have virtual spaces that I interact with people, and I also have physical. Virtual is a lot easier because it's hard to get out. It just is. And one of the most authentic things that the documentary provides is that it's very difficult for individuals that have, you know, strong conditions to get places, to have, like, you know, just to go out to bar with friends or to go meet people. I mean, especially in your 30s. And I think, like, everybody that I know in their 30s, I know people who are not disabled who struggle making friends yeah. in their 30s.
Yeah.
You know, so you add a disability to that. It can be extremely isolating, extremely mm-hmm. isolating. And I think there's a powerful thing that the thing depicts when it comes to this. Same thing with dating, man. Dating with a disability, it's very difficult. It's scary to be real yeah. about who you are in the dating world. I do it. I put everything out there because, like, you know, if we're going to date, kind of have to.
Yeah.
But you can understand why somebody would be afraid to be real, because it's very vulnerable to live and to try to engage in romance mm-hmm. when you have that condition because you're afraid to be judged.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, like you said, even without your disability, like I relate to it because we live like whole lives online. I mean, everyone does to some extent, but especially people like us and what we do. Like we spend all our time on like Discord and social media and stuff like that, right?
Yeah,
like we have a whole network and friends, networks and networks of people, like whole bubbles and bubbles and bubbles of people who we just interact with through our little screens on our phone. Or that's a whole world. But again, like we're living 10 years later than Matt's ever did, right? The world now is so different than the world he had. Now it's not as like exceptional to have online communities, but then. What he was doing was revolutionary, and that's part of what the documentary is about, right? Like understanding the power of these online friends, right?
Yeah, and honestly, you know, like in a world where like MetaQuest and all these virtual reality things exist now, it kind of makes you wonder, like, you know, what these virtual relationships are going to be like in about 10 years. Like,
I think the lines will blur even more. Imagine you have like virtual reality and all kinds of stuff. And then it'll be eventually we'll have even faster transportation between places, cheaper transportation. Was there anything you didn't like? Do you have any criticisms?
Dude, I don't know if I do because yeah. I feel as if it's such a miracle of a documentary as it is mm-hmm. because 60-something% of the documentary is World of Warcraft.
That's true. Yeah. And we're not World of Warcraft players.
No, we're not. Yeah. So yeah. I'm not sure what I would do different. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I would say that would make it a better documentary because the documentary is so emotionally impactful on its own. I mean, dude, rewatching it today, I was 30, 40 minutes in. And I was already kind of in tears.
Yeah.
And it's an hour and a half, and it's just barely halfway, and it's mostly around the romantic relationship with him and I can't remember her name.
Lizette, and she plays Rumor.
She plays who?
Rumor.
Okay. It was around that time where I could just start to. Feel my heart being pulled again. Yeah.
And especially when they're interviewing the real girl and you can see the real emotions and how hurt she is by the things that happen. Yeah. Like genuine, real emotions, even when she's talking about it. Oh,
and you could kind of sense, like, you know, there are physical disabilities and there are also disabilities that you don't see. And what I kind of got from her is that there's a little bit of social anxiety from her.
For sure.
You know,
sure.
That's what I got from her. And I think it's pretty profound that they were able to, you know, circumvent both of their individual problems mm-hmm. and make something amazingly profound between them. And you could kind of sense that from her that it did mean something from her.
Absolutely.
And there's no telling what it might have been if he was just a little more secure in himself to actually take that chance and take that risk and say who he was. But even though there's that fear of rejection, mm-hmm. but I think it's relatable.
Yeah.
It's relatable. You understand where he's coming from. I would say that even in real life, you know, even people who are able-bodied deal with that worry about mm-hmm. that sense of rejection. Yeah. If I go and talk to that person, will they reject me?
Yeah.
You know, will they accept me for who I am? Because I think most people just want to be accepted for who they are.
But you know, it's only a hypothetical mm-hmm. until you actually just ask, and maybe they'll say no, maybe they'll say yes, but just ask respectfully, right?
If I can make another comparison, yeah, just ask. If I can make another comparison, I was scared to do this for a long time
on video.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
I was very scared to do this because I did not think I had the cadence to actually talk on video or podcasting or whatever. And if I cherish Lizzie for she messaged me and was like, "Hey, do you want a podcast?" And I had to be, she had no idea of anything about me at all. She knew I was a writer. And then, you know, I was like,
and honestly, that's all that matters, right?
That's all that matters. Yeah, I was just writing for her because I didn't really think I could do this thing that we're doing now. I responded back to her. I have a condition. It kind of helped, kind of messes my speech just a little bit. I'm not sure if I have the, I'm not sure if I'm going to work well on video or audio in the audio form. I joked that I said, I think I have a voice for print. You know, some people got a face for radio. I thought that I had a voice for print.
Oh, poor guy.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Uh-huh.
And she was like, "You need to do it." And I was like,
"Good for her." Yeah, good for you.
And I was like, I responded with, "But I don't want to. You need to do it."
Lizzie rocks. Yeah.
And then she went to Brian and Ava.
Yeah.
And was like, "Hey, can I tell them?" And I was like, "Okay, sure."
Yeah.
Went to Brian and Ava, told them. She goes, "They think you need to do it." Oh my God.
Lizzie rocks. That's awesome. What an awesome story.
I know. She rocks. She rocks.
I think the first podcast I heard you on, I think, was like the best movies of 2023. Do you remember that one?
That was the first one.
That was your first one. And I remember I was listening to that podcast just as a fan. I was just listening and I was like, this guy is the smartest guy on this podcast. This guy has seen all the things they haven't seen and he has such smart takes. This is amazing. Who is this guy? I remember that from last year.
Yeah. So that was the first one. And that's why she wanted me on there.
Yeah.
Because she could tell that I had watched things and had the knowledge that nobody had.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, Lizzie, I don't want to. She goes, "You need to do it."
Yeah.
She goes, but she also, to her credit, she also said, "Don't do anything you're not comfortable with at the same time."
Yeah.
I think you should do it, but don't do anything you're not comfortable with. So I eventually gave in, and that is the same. Yeah. It is the same dynamic that he was going through. And it's very difficult when you're in that position, in that condition, to know whether anyone's going to accept you.
Yeah.
You know, it is a fear. It is a fear whether anyone's going to like be open to the idea of your differences, of who you are and what you represent. Because we live in a very shallow world. I would say
there's that we live in a shallow world and everyone naturally has some type of anxiety, insecurity, and it's easy to just bottle it up in your head and imagine it's worse than it is when, if you just do it and breathe, maybe it's
right? Pretty much. Well, long story short, I did one and now she can't shut me up, you know, now she can't get rid of me anyway. But that's the comparison, man. It is very difficult to have somebody in a condition, in that problem, trying to get yourself out of your shell and trying to get in there and see if anybody's going to either be judgmental or actually accept who you are and embrace you and actually make you a part of it, you know? And yeah.
And I think... I mean, people say representation matters so much that it almost sounds meaningless, but it really, really, really does matter. Seeing this kind of visibility, seeing people like you, people like Matt's, like seeing them and seeing how they're normal people. They have thoughts, they have feelings, they have emotions. And at one point in the documentary, he says when people came up to him talking slowly and he's like,
No. And that's so funny.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, no, dude, me too. It's happened many times. Yeah, it's very difficult when people automatically make assumptions that's what I was trying to tell you, you know, on that previous. It's important to ask questions. Mm-hmm. Even if you think that person in that position might be offended or whatever, I feel like even if they are offended, they might appreciate the fact that you asked rather than did something more offensive.
Yeah.
Such as treat them like they're stupid.
Yeah.
Or treat them like they're not capable of something or any of that. And what this documentary shows is that even when somebody who is so self-contained, they are capable of human connection mm-hmm. in a way that you can't even imagine.
Yeah. And I think one thing the documentary shows also is like, he was so good at understanding people's emotions and listening to them and giving them the feedback that they needed or the advice that they needed to hear. And I think part of that, of course, is his natural personality. But I think his personality forms because of the own hardships in his life. And that helps build a kind of like understanding and empathetic person that sometimes when you have so much privilege and you have so much power that you don't focus on human connections and kindness. But I don't know. Do you understand what I'm saying?
No, I do yeah. In a sense. Yeah, I do in a sense. Yeah. I mean, dude, even in my position, I have a level of privilege. With my condition, which is cerebral palsy, there are people in way worse states than I am. Some of them are catatonic. I don't know if you know what that, what yeah. I mean by that.
Yeah.
And I am grateful every day that I'm able to say something and actually speak my experience and actually talk about what I love and express myself. And I cannot imagine what it would be like to feel trapped, trapped in your own body, like him, you know?
Yeah.
He was trapped in his body. The older he got, the more by the time that we get to the end of the documentary, he's not doing anything but moving his fingers.
I might be wrong, but I think he only said two fingers, I think.
That was mostly it. And that has to be a scary feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes across in the documentary, the more angry he gets, that fear turned into anger and resentment.
Mm-hmm.
You feel as if your whole experience is folding in.
Yeah.
And that's a privilege that I have. I don't have that. I'm able to talk with you. I'm able to go to the movies. I'm able to love. I've been married. I've been married before.
I didn't know that.
You know?
Yeah, I knew that.
Well, I don't talk about it, but I have.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not now. I mean, but that's a different.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a different story. But you know.
But you have a life.
I have a life, and that's the point. I've experienced love. Stuff like that. So there's a level of privilege that even I have had,
mm-hmm.
you know, in my experience compared to everybody else.
And so what I was saying, I think just visibility is so important, because if you imagine what we were saying in our last podcast is like, sometimes people with disabilities are so marginalized, they're almost overlooked entirely. I think you're saying like of all the minorities, nobody ever talks about people with disabilities, especially you're looking at this election campaign trail. Nobody talks about this specific group.
Nobody talks about it.
But it's such an important group, especially because it's just something that it's biology. It just happens. It's not even like a specific, like there's nothing. It's just anybody, anything could happen.
And the thing is, most people are going to end up physically disabled. Most people are.
Yeah.
The older you get, the more your body is going.
Yes.
Whether you're Matt's or, you know, or Vin, we get older, things happen to us, our bodies just eventually just.
Yeah, yeah.
They get old. We're all going to end up like that. And for that not to be understood, even among people in middle age or younger age, it's good to know, because like you got to treat everybody equally.
Mm-hmm.
Our experiences matter just as much as everybody else.
And I think talking about it more and more and more, getting movies like this, getting even influential people like Stephen Hawking and John Oliver doing the episode about it, I think things like that, like it helps raise awareness and it helps raise visibility. And I think this is just the beginning, and hopefully over the next couple of years we'll get more and more and more, and you know, it'll help, there'll be a level of like understanding and respect that more than what there is now. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah, I mean, one of the awesome.
I was just thinking that, like, you know, when we were doing the disability podcast, we were also talking like the Black Panther moment, right? And like for people from South Asia, like I kind of felt that a little bit with Ms. Marvel, especially those first few episodes. I was like, yeah, this is me. This is my moment. I remember when I got those Ms. Marvel comics and I was like, whoa, when I was a kid reading those and like, that was me. That was what my life was like. You know what I mean? And I couldn't for the life of you even think about what the equivalent for somebody in a wheelchair is.
There's not much.
Why?
There's not much.
Why?
Yeah, there's not much out there. I think it's eventually going to change. I mean, you know, I think it's eventually going to get there, but we're not there.
Like the best you could think of is something like Cyborg. You know Cyborg, right? From DC? Because he's technically a guy with prosthetic limbs.
Yeah, there are disabled characters.
Darth Vader.
Like Daredevil was kind of a cool one because he's got limitations and stuff like that.
Yeah, but
that's the closest, but there's nobody in
I'm thinking more like mobility. Yeah.
Yeah, mobility wise, the one, again, like we talked on the podcast, the only one that even comes close is Professor X.
And I don't know why,
but I feel like we even deserve better than that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I remember I was actually upset in Days of Future Past where they'd like undo his disability and he's walking in the. I was like, no, put him in the wheelchair.
but McAvoy kills it though. McAvoy does
he's
kill
good.
It.
He's good.
That's... And so does what's his name?
Fassbender. Stewart.
Stewart, yeah, Stewart's great. Stewart's awesome.
Yeah.
But there's the thing is, I think what bothers me about the Professor X thing, and I think I finally figured out why it bothers me, is that he's not the main player. He's more of what's his name? The eye patch guy. He's like the Nick Fury of X-Men, kind of. I want my Wolverine Wolverine.
Sure, okay.
Wolverine. You know, I want my Batman moment. I want my Black Panther character.
Well, you know, Batgirl becomes Oracle in a wheelchair.
She does.
And then they undid that with the New 52, and then she went back to being Batgirl. And then I think they brought it. They keep going back and forth because they don't know what to do with her.
Yeah.
But she's not Batgirl in a wheelchair. When she's in the wheelchair, then she becomes a different character, and she's just on the computer.
But that's the thing. She doesn't really do much besides be on a computer, right? Like, she doesn't get out there in the action. She doesn't...
Not when she's in wheelchair, no.
I'm ready for a character who's in the action, man. That's what I want. I want a character who's in the action.
Have you ever heard of a Lone Wolf and Cub?
Vaguely, yeah.
You should watch those because basically the baby is in a baby cart, like a baby carriage, and the baby carriage is loaded with weapons. Right. So this little baby is like firing all these weapons. It's the inspiration for Baby Yoda. Those babies firing all the weapons from inside his little cart. Imagine a superhero in a wheelchair and the wheelchair is weaponized.
Oh, nice.
See the potential. Printing money.
I mean, the closest one I think of, like I told you, that I had when I was younger, I was like, man, that's cool. I'm like 8 or 9 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And Alien Resurrection comes on.
Yeah, we talked about that. Yeah.
Terrible film. Yeah. But
it's still, he's not the Wolverine of that movie, right?
No, but it's cool because like he's got agency.
Yeah.
He's got agency in it because he's about trying to survive.
Right.
And all of a sudden you just see him like piece together a gun with different parts of his chair. I was like, That's my guy. It's like it needs to be something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Something where if you put that character in a situation where they need to fight their way out, well, he's got it. He's going to wreck shop. That's what I'm waiting for.
Mm-hmm.
I want the cool version of the character. I want my Black Panther moment, man. I don't want it. But back to Evelyn, the spotlight. It is one of my best experiences this year. I am so grateful I got to watch it at Sundance. it's one of the last things that I watched at Sundance before the whole thing wrapped up, and they cut us out. And I am very, very grateful that I get to talk about it with you in the Cosmic Circus, and that James actually wrote a review. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody has read his review.
But they will now. Go check it out at CosmicCircus.com.
Yeah, go check out that review. It's a great documentary. In my top 10 of the year. I think even if I were able-bodied, it would be in my top 10 of the year. So, yeah.
Good film. Thank you for this recommendation, John. Thanks. Because this, you know, this was not on our radar at all. And you were like, this movie. So thank you for this recommendation. Really, it's worth it, guys. It's really worth
it. Yeah, if you're going to pick a movie this weekend, pick this over Venom 3. That's all I'm saying. So Venom 3 is bad. Don't watch Venom 3.
I just want to say quickly, let me think. This week I watched Venom. What did I start? I watched Megalopolis. I watched a foreign movie called Armand. I watched Goodrich with Michael Keaton. I watched Venom 3. And now I watched The Remarkable Life of Iblin. Those are four bad movies. And this was like the shining light of my weekend, because this was such a good movie. One of the best of the year. And those four were abysmal.
So terrible. Terrible films, man. I mean, I came out of Venom 3 and I was like, I got nothing to say. I got nothing. I'm like, I could try, but I got nothing to say about it. I never felt so empty.
It's my worst of the year. Worst. Below the Crow.
Below the Crow. I felt very empty. Somebody was saying, like, man, it's the best one of the three. I'm like, wow, that's not a very high bar, but okay. And then I watched them and I'm like, no, that's the worst. That's the worst of the three.
There's nothing there. Nothing.
Yeah. There's nothing good about it. Nothing good about it. Don't watch Venom 3, everyone. Go watch The Remarkable Life of Iblin. It's on Netflix. If you've got a streaming service, you don't even got to pay for it now. Just go on, go watch it. It's there. It's there. It's got everything you ever want. Like heartwarming fantasy, romance, drama. You know, if you're a gamer, there's a little bit of that for you too. It is a great documentary.
And I think what's also nice about it is right after watching, then I went on YouTube and I was reading and watching stuff about Duchenne's disease. And you can find some nice interviews on YouTube about people with the disease. And you can quickly learn a lot about it because it's a real condition and people are still able to live like whole lives. But it's so stressful because as they get older, their muscles stop working. So it's like, you know, they burn brightly and just research, fund to try to help. Find ways and treatments and help improve their lives, you know?
Yeah.
But it's great to like open your eyes and see like what's happening in the world. What are these lives like and what can we do to help? Right. Right. Well, thanks guys
for watching. Yeah, well said, man. Well said.
Thanks. Well, thanks guys for watching. I forgot. The credits of this movie. So when the movie ends, sit through the credits. Very important. In the credits, they have not one, not two, but three blocks of text. John, did you see this?
I don't remember, no.
Okay, so I don't know. Who sits through the credits on a streaming movie? I don't know why I'm like this. But they have three blocks of text in the credits, okay? The first one says, a huge thank you to everyone who participated in the making of this film and to the creators of World of Warcraft. They don't have to put a thank you. They put a thank you like that. It's just nice. And to the creators of World of Warcraft. Okay, next one. This film is based upon thousands of pages of archival text. Thank you to all the role players who contributed to this. A big thank you to these people, they named the people, for making the specialized equipment for Mats so he was able to game and communicate with his friends. A huge thank you to these people for writing the first article about Mats and for making his story known to the world. Thank you to Cure Duchenne for working to find a cure for Duchenne and to Able Gamers for creating opportunities that enable play for people with disabilities. They don't have to be saying these thank yous, but they're individually thanking each of the people who helped make Matt's life better. That's incredible, isn't it? All the people, like the unseen people who like actually made this movie possible, made his story possible, made all these connections possible. And one more. Then they actually list all the individual users who Matt talked to. They list all their usernames, all the people in the guild, all the, you know, like the whole community is there in the credits. And then it says, "So thank you to all who role-played with Mats and were a part of creating his online home and a place for characters such as Iblin to come to life. To the creators of to the characters of the Starlight Guild, the players behind them, to the role-playing communities, to all the people who continuously form friendships online, reaching out across geographical, conventional, and cultural and medical barriers to let another human being know in their heart that you're not alone and that they matter." What a beautiful message, right?
Oh my gosh, man.
Sorry, I know I read it fast, but like...
Just like, it's like, again, right now. I'm just
it gets
like,
you.
Don't cry. Don't cry, John. Don't cry. Right. Don't cry. Don't do it.
I mean, one, why is it buried in the credits? But two, like, it's pretty incredible that it's in the movie. So read the credits, guys. And I think just appreciate it. Yeah.
Right, because they're just trying to pay tribute to everyone that they can in a quick manner.
Yeah.
I mean, the documentary itself is a pretty quick watch, and I think it's actually better for it.
Yeah, for sure.
But still, that's so beautiful. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, very well said. All right, guys, that's it. That's it for real this time. Thank you all for watching. If you liked the review, be sure to like, subscribe, leave a comment. Have you seen the movie yet? Do you know someone with this condition or something similar? Please let us know in the comments. We read every comment, and we'd love to hear your stories. I'm Vin. You can find me on Twitter at VinWritesWords.
I'm John, and you can find me on Twitter at JohnMovieWatch.
And be sure to follow thecosmiccircus.com at MyCosmicCircus, where you can find more reviews, articles, editorials, and fans like the one you just watched. And check out James's review, which is published on the site now. Thanks, guys. See you next time.